Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Bonjour. Willkommen et bienvenue. We have a Patreon at Red Handed, as I am sure you are aware. And you can listen to loads of epic, juicy podcast content over at patreon.com/redhanded. You may not have known that for the next week, we at Red Handed are offering you the deal of a true crime lifetime. If you sign up for 1 year of Patreon membership at patreon.com/redhanded in the next 7 days, you will only pay for the cost of 10 months. That's 12 months for the price of just 10. And I'm not that good at maths, but it sounds like a good deal to me. Now, if you're wondering what you'll be getting during these 12 heavily discounted months, shut up, because I'm going to tell you. We've put together all of our best bits from the last month on Patreon to give you a taster of what you can look forward to. We've got a clip from our full-length bonus episode on the history of DNA evidence. That's available for everyone who is a $10 patron or up. We've got a segment from In the News, which is our topical headline news show. This month, we've talked about a man who got burned alive by police in America, which was pretty rough stuff. And that's available as a video for people who pay $10 and up. Not the guy being burned, just us talking about it. And audio for everybody else. And of course, we have some juicy, juicy gossip from our iconic After the Show show, Under the Duvet, which is again available as a video for all $10 and up patrons and audio for everyone else. Have a listen, and if you like what you hear, rush, do not walk, run over and make the most of our annual membership flash sale, where we've literally set the discount slider as far down as Patreon will physically let us. Here we go.
So, this month, it is the return of Florida Man. Except this month, he's the victim.
Okay.
And not the criminal. There you go. Subversion. There. Have you had your expectations subverted? I hope so. You fucking bigots. So.
Nine minutes in.
He thought he was going to be a criminal. So. But the thing is, he is also a criminal. As well as a victim. Let me explain.
Okay. Sometimes things can be two things.
They can be two things. So, all of the stuff I'm about to tell you took place a few months ago, but videos have only just been released. Therefore, it makes the May edition of In the News, because that's when we saw video footage.
Okay.
And that is what brought it to the attention of the media. Of which are we now one? Media outlet, Red Handed reports.
I have no, honestly, I'm too scared to even say anything.
Let's not say.
You know what? I don't even exist.
No, good. That is the safest way to be. So, what is this video evidence of? I hear you screaming in my ear. Well, the attorney representing Gene Barreto claims that it shows the moment his client was cooked alive. Yes, that's right. You heard me correctly. Cooked alive. On the 27th of February, sheriff's deputies in Osceola County, Florida, responded to multiple 911 calls about a biker gang pointing guns at members of the public. When officers turned up to investigate, several bikers fled the scene. That's not very biker of them. Fleeing the scene.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to, like, instigate violence.
Yeah, please enrage the biker gangs for us, will you? Thank you ever so much.
One of the bikers that fled was Gene Barreto. Or John? Gene? I don't know. It's G-E-A-N.
Must Gene. Be Gene.
Billy, yeah. Like, Billy Jean. Anyway. So now, it's different. Billy Jean was a woman. I don't know why I said that. Anyway.
And also spelled with a J.
Oh, this is spelled with a J. What did I say?
I'm dyslexic. I can't keep up.
Gisney. Now, it's difficult to say whether Barreto, we're just going to call him that instead of Gene, was or wasn't actually at the scene. This is just what people claim, that he was one of the people that fled. We don't know. So the footage of the incident that's been released has been cut together.
Okay.
Which is...
Supercut.
A bit suspicious in and of itself. What it does show is a bunch of guys on bikes, but it's hard to know who's who, right? Helicopter footage released by the sheriff's office shows deputies failing to stop someone that they say was Barreto. And even had the audacity, Barreto, apparently if this is him in the video footage, even had the audacity to pop a wheelie as he sped past them.
Uh-oh.
Which is pretty biker of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, the police claimed that they then followed Barreto until he stopped to fill up petrol at a gas station. There, several officers had another go at stopping the wheeling menace. But things quickly turned sour. The officers ran into the petrol station forecourt, tackling Barreto and his bike to the ground. That's pretty heavy going.
Mm.
Apparently, Barreto's petrol cap was still open when they did this.
Mm.
And when his bike toppled, fuel poured out and drenched him. Deputy David Crawford then shouted, "Kill the pump and there's gas," before uttering the immortal words, "You're about to get tasered again, dude."
I hate the word dude so much.
Me too. I just don't feel like there's really a place for it in civilized society. But would you like to see a video of what happened?
Yes, obviously. I think I have a reasonably good idea.
We'll leave the link for everybody else in the episode description so you guys can watch this fucking horror show. Oh, shit. Fucking hell. Jesus. Oh, they're so stupid. What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
It's exactly what you think it is.
It's exactly what you think it is. And if you're like, I don't really want to watch that, I don't really need that image burned in my mind, it is quite far away. But if even the, like, suggestion of what is happening is too much, we'll explain it to you. Mm. Basically, it's like a petrol station forecourt,
mm-hmm.
and then you suddenly just see a bunch of police cars like rush in, and then you just see a giant explosion like a few seconds later, mm-hmm. and it's just like, phoom! I mean, you're not even meant to have your fucking mobile phone on when you're in a petrol station.
Mm-hmm.
Though I did watch a Debunked about that, and they put a bunch of mobile phones on top of each other and then pour petrol on them and had them all ring at the same time and nothing happened. But don't get covered in petrol and then get tasered is the fucking situation here.
One of the most culture shock things I ever experienced was watching people smoke in petrol stations in Korea.
Oh my God.
Just like filling up their car.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know what? Better safe than sorry, maybe. You know, as far as like petrol goes.
Mm.
So that's what happened. So if you haven't already pieced it together, Deputy Crawford, basically, after the petrol fell all over Barreto, after they knocked his bike over onto mm-hmm. him, tasered Gene Barreto.
Gene.
I haven't heard it said out loud. Gene Barreto. I don't know why I'm thinking like Jean Benet, and it's about like Jean. Anyway, Barreto over, and obviously immediately set alight to him and everything mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. the area. And there's like a massive fucking explosion because the tank in the fucking motorbike goes up. Crawford and several other officers were also set alight. Eventually, everyone and everything was put out using fire extinguishers. And in a heat of the moment, somebody poured Gatorade over them as well. Which, like, that's, I mean, every little helps, I guess.
No, it doesn't. Not in this case, I'm afraid.
So in the body cam footage, which has also been released, Barreto can be heard begging to be taken to the hospital. An officer tells them that he will take him, but they'd like to know why he was running.
He's
on fire because of a stupid, stupid action that you made. And you're like, why were you running? Are you fucking serious? I mean, obviously they are because they're fucking morons. To which Barreto replied that he wasn't actually running. Barreto and Deputy David Crawford were then both taken to the hospital, where Crawford was treated for second and third degree burns to his legs. Barreto received third degree burns to 75% of his body and is still in hospital 2 months later.
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's very close to 75% that you are just dead.
Yeah.
With third degree burns.
I mean, 75%.
Yeah.
That's like just the bottom half of your fucking calves mm-hmm. not being burnt or some mm-hmm. shit. And third degree burns is like, am I right in that that's when the burns are so bad that your nerve endings are gone so you can't even feel anything anymore? Jesus Christ.
Second degree is if it blisters on contact.
And you can feel the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his attorney, and I'm by no way saying that he's not in pain. I'm saying it's that bad that the damage is so bad that his nerves are fucking gone. So Beretta's attorney say that he is in constant agony and undergoing treatment to remove his dead skin. He has gauze covering almost his entire body except for his head, which was protected by the helmet that he was wearing. And he has to be rewrapped daily. Fuck me. I mean, I don't even know how to.
Do you know what they use for that now?
No.
Snake skin.
What?
Burn skin will heal faster. Under like a snake skin layer because it's protective, but also it's not going to stick to you like a gauze is. So they're using a lot of snake skin hospitals now.
Fucking hell. Because yeah, I was going to say, like, when I fell off that motorbike and I ripped the bit off my leg, I was having to change my bandages and I had gauze on. I was like buying that Vaseline gauze for like burns victims, but still it was sticking to the open wound and I had to change it like every 2-3 days and I just wanted to fucking not have a leg anymore because it was so painful. But my biggest fear was that the idea that if it got infected, they were going to scrub it with steel wool. And I was like, there is literally no chance on earth I will survive that. I will just die. So yeah, this is just very, very upsetting. So yeah, he has to be rewrapped twice. He has to be rewrapped daily and doesn't have the requisite amount of skin to contain his bodily fluids. Oh my God. So in a press conference given after the footage was released, and it's interesting that they only made a press conference after the footage was released. I'm sure they were hoping that they could just get away with it. The county sheriff, a man named Marcus Lopez, recommended that both John Jean Barreto and Deputy David Crawford both be charged. Sure. So they say, or he says, that Barreto was recklessly driving along with fleeing and resisting arrest, and that Crawford, the police officer, was acting, carried out a misdemeanor charge of culpable negligence. Got to get Barreto, though. Got to close that case.
Oh, my God.
Barreto's attorneys say that the charges against him are unjustified given his lack of any criminal history. Absolutely no evidence he's ever owned a gun. And the fact that no gun was found at the scene. Also, given the fact that they have maimed him for the rest of his life. And also that they don't even seem to be able to prove that he fled the scene of some sort of unspecified disturbance.
Jesus,
yeah, Jesus indeed.
In one of Auschwitz's experiments, volunteers sat at a table and shared a jug of juice and then talked for 20 minutes. Then the surfaces were all tested for genetic material, as well as each other's DNA. So-called foreign DNA turned up on about half of the chairs and glasses. And it was all over the participants' hands and the table.
That is, I mean, obviously. Yep. Fucking obviously. Mm-hmm. Not to like undermine this experiment, but I mean, like, yes, that makes so much sense.
Yeah. So newsflash, if you've ever been in a room, your DNA is in there.
And even just like wiping past somebody on a tube, on the bus, on the stairs, everything.
So the only explanation is that the foreign DNA bits were carried in from the outside, perhaps from family members or even strangers that they'd shared public transport with. It's much more likely these days that a sample will contain a mixture of several DNA profiles, and it's very difficult to tell them apart. And it's also impossible to say whether the DNA was already there before the crime was committed or how it got there. Up to 15% of the DNA on our hands comes from other people. I'm upset.
I'm sad.
And if you stand still and talk to someone for 30 seconds, your DNA can be found more than a yard away from where you were standing. In 2 minutes, the average person sheds enough skin cells to cover an American football field.
What the fuck?
Yep.
Jesus.
And don't forget about those little mites that live in your eyelashes.
Yep. Wow. In 2 minutes, enough skin cells. And I use acids. Imagine how much skin cells I'm shedding. Fucking hell. Yeah. All over the shop.
So all of this means that if a person's DNA is found on the handle of a knife that's sticking out of a murder victim, you still cannot say for sure that that person is the killer.
Which brings us to the Phantom of Heilbronn.
Oh, my little German boy. Oh no, don't make me run, I'm too full of chocolate.
So in 2007, the murder of a 22-year-old policewoman shook the town of Heilbronn in southwest Germany. The case was followed in the media all over the country, and police put in more than 16,000 hours of overtime to try and catch the killer. Not least because when DNA found at the crime scene was processed, it turned out that this DNA was linked to a string of cold cases. Imagine the feeling when they saw that. They'd be like, oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Police suddenly found themselves looking for a female serial killer who appeared to have committed, in total, 14 homicides. And that's not all. The Phantom of Heilbronn was linked to over 40 crimes in total, all over Germany and even into Austria and France. And as well as murder, the crimes included the robberies of a car dealership and a school, and the DNA was collected on everything from a biscuit to a heroin needle. So this person, I mean, imagine the
they
profile.
They live a full life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Imagine the, like, the psychological profile or the killer profile that they tried to put together based on this. They're like, biscuits, heroin needles, schools, banks, murders, everything. This person's been running rampant for like four decades all over the fucking, like, this region of Europe, doing whatever the fuck they want. So the police then spent the next 2 years hunting the Phantom of Heilbronn until they discovered the rather embarrassing truth. There was no Phantom of Heilbronn, just a string of unrelated, contaminated cotton swabs. Most likely, all the samples from the crime scenes across Germany had been contaminated by one factory worker who was packaging the swabs. So the factory worker's DNA was on the sample before it even left the factory.
Fabulous, fabulous stuff. And even worse, there are a number of cases of people being wrongly convicted for crimes based on DNA evidence. There's the Devon man who was wrongly charged with a rape in Manchester because samples were mixed up in the lab. There's a man with Parkinson's who was unable to walk more than a few feet, who was convicted for a burglary he couldn't physically have committed. And it was only his lawyer's insistence on a retest that got him out. And there are other cases, like retired taxi driver David Butler. In the early hours of the morning one night in 2011, police knocked on his door and arrested him for a brutal murder that had taken place 6 years earlier. And they claimed to have him back to rights. His DNA had been found on the victim's fingernails, cardigan button, and a bandage around her leg. He spent the next 8 months in prison on remand. But thankfully, the solicitor stepped up. He sought a forensic expert who revealed that the sample was a mixed partial profile. It came from multiple people and was of low quality. Butler had a skin condition, meaning that he shed flakes of skin and left larger traces of DNA than the average person. And as a taxi driver, he was in contact with multiple people every day. He was eventually acquitted, but without his team's tireless efforts, it's quite possible that he might still be locked up now. He told Radio 4 of his time in jail, "It was hard. The loneliness was the worst. Not speaking to your family. I've led a good life. I've been a good man. And this was an absolute horror story."
It's just the nightmarish, like, 1984 slash, like, scientific gaslighting, isn't it? Where it's just like, I didn't do this. I know I didn't do this. You did it. We found your DNA there. Yeah. And you absolutely did it. And obviously, like you said at the start, we've gone from a world in which people didn't understand DNA. So juries were very reluctant to, like, prosecutors and defense teams were reluctant to bring it up in court because they knew that juries didn't really understand it. So they were worried about overcomplicating things and people not really trusting it, to now being in a situation where so many people think, because they've watched CSI and it's like the CSI effect, where now if it's not there, people are kind of like, well, why don't you just have his DNA?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that we just have to always take these things, how they fit in with the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so scary. Imagine being in that situation.
I can't.
Don't do it.
So in all of the cases we just went through, circumstantial evidence separated those convicted from the crimes and proved their innocence. But how many more have been sent down for crimes that they didn't commit?
DNA profiling, as we've talked about, is a powerful tool for criminal investigation. We're absolutely not saying that it isn't. It allows us to identify traces with an amazing level of accuracy. As we saw, for example, in the Colin Pitchfork case, DNA evidence can swoop in and expose a killer just when all hope of finding them seems lost. And it really has, like, given killers fewer and fewer places to hide. But when we assume that the person we identify using DNA has to be the criminal, we can get into very hot water indeed. Trust in empirical facts, science, and authority is one thing. But now that DNA is such a multifaceted and pervasive part of the process, when we're talking about law enforcement and criminal investigations, it's unfortunately become another pawn in the game. We've seen time and time again that those involved in the criminal justice system can push a certain scenario just to secure a conviction. We've said this before. It's not really about what you know. Often it can just be about the narrative that the prosecution or the defense is able to tell. It's about the story they tell in court and how convincing that is. And the presence of a DNA profile is respected as objective proof of culpability, especially these days, like we said with the CSI effect. But we have to understand that it is just a part of the puzzle. Yes, prisoners have been freed from terrible punishments, but are we in danger of going full circle and wrongly condemning people on the strength of DNA evidence alone? I would argue that's already happened and is already happening. Are we sweeping away circumstantial evidence, personal testimonies, and expert guidance in our haste to kill out a suspect? And if you ask me to do an episode on any of those things, circumstantial evidence, eyewitness testimony, expert witnesses, we could also pick holes in them. It's because they all fit together. Into like one multi-pronged way that our criminal justice system should be working. None of them alone can stand up and support a conviction. Interpreting the evidence is where the skill of an investigator really kicks in. So if you're ever on a jury, dear listener, make sure you take everything into account, because it's just not as simple as it appears. No, sorry. Bob.
Jiminy Christmas. Hello. Welcome. Slightly chaotic energy this morning, because I've just had my cervix scraped again.
That's the least fun.
I mean, I'm a bit worried there might be something wrong with me, because I just can't feel it. Like, when they get the little, like, T-Rex arm and, like, biopsy you, I'm, like, watching them do it, so I know it's happening. Can't feel a thing.
Well, that's good.
Is it?
Well,
maybe I've got like a dearth of nerves in my cervix. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. But the amount that I enjoy a smear test, the idea that you can't feel it, it feels like a good thing.
I mean, maybe. Like, the doctor was like, you might not want to watch this bit. And I was like, trust me, yes, I do. So they do like the normal smear test, like a little broom looking thing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a biopsy.
Yeah.
I've only ever had just like a normal smear.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Get your smears. I'm telling you about my cervical scraping experience. You're not scared to go. So they do that with like the little broom and then the little mascara brush.
I don't know, because I don't look.
Okay, I like cannot get enough.
I just lie back and shut my eyes and then
lie back and think of England.
Exactly.
So I was watching the whole thing. And because obviously 6 months ago I went and I had like low level changes. So then they sort of monitor you and you have to go back. Like, fucking big up the NHS, man. It was amazing. They actually sent me a text being like, your appointment has cost the NHS £160, which I thought was a really good thing to be like, you know, this does cost money. Like, this is not free. Like, I thought that was... It just sort of makes you think about it, I think. So yeah, after they do that, she was like, so like, if it, you know, if I want to biopsy anything, I will. And she was like, looks kind of fine. And like, obviously they spray you with essentially vinegar to like bring up any cell changes. So they go, well, you know how some people, when they eat salt and vinegar crisps, their mouth goes white? It's like that. So, and if you have HPV, which I do, so does everyone, don't worry about it. Then it'll go white. So she's like, but it could be the salt and vinegar crisps situation, or it could be that it hasn't gone away.
Okay.
And I was like, that's fine. So she biopsied me twice with this little like T-Rex arm, couldn't feel anything. And it's like bleeding, like it's like definitely, and I feel like something has happened. But like when she was just like nipping parts of my innards, nothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, I'm very not of the same situation. So I'm glad I've not yet been biopsied. Fingers crossed, won't have to be biopsied. Thankfully, the smear is not as bad, but it is bad enough.
Well, yeah, and I have to get my IUD changed as well. That's not fun. I've done that.
No.
I'm on my second one now. So I've had it. When I first got it was years ago, like before I went to Costa Rica, because I didn't think you'd be able to get the pill. Turns out you can. And I got that before... when it was like reasonably new, no anesthetic the first time I had it.
Oh yeah.
And that was bad.
And
no,
then
it was that was bad because I had it put in under general anaesthetic when I had my second laparoscopy, but then I had my allergic reaction to it, so I had to have it out 3 weeks after I had had a laparoscopy. Mm-hmm. Which, if anyone's had a laparoscopy, you will know that you are in a lot of discomfort mm-hmm. and pain after you have had it done. And then I had to have it pulled out with no anaesthetic after 3 weeks of an intense allergic reaction to it. So that was pretty horrible.
So I need to get it whipped out and another one whipped back in. Mm-hmm. But they anaesthetise you now. Well, they were like local, but they didn't used to.
No, they definitely didn't for me. And I still had stitches dissolving. So that was pretty rough. Yeah.
But
hooray.
Don't be scared.
No.
Go and get your smears.
Exactly. We both survived.
Yeah, exactly. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know, don't have sex or do any rigorous exercise. And I was like, there's literally absolutely no danger of me doing either of those things in the next week. So don't worry about it. Be fine. But yeah, it'll be fine. She was like, it's going to figure itself out. It'll just take time. Because I've had the vaccine for a start. Mm-hmm. And also it just sort of just goes away in the end.
Okay. Well, so, that's good.
I'll just have to go back in 6 months. Well, they're going to biopsy. And obviously if it's like, you're dying, then mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do something else about it. But I feel like it's fine.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, I had the HPV vaccine as well. So fingers crossed, everything stays as it's supposed to be and I can avoid the little
T-Rex arm
forever because that is something I don't want to do.
Oh, Hannah, just knocked a full pint of water over onto our rug. Well done, me. Also left my laptop at home. So I'm just fucking killing it today. Just murdering life.
Excellent. So yeah, speaking of murdering things, we did do our UK tour. UK tour, what the fuck?
Oh yeah,
we did do our live show at the podcast show mm-hmm. on Friday night in Angel, which was a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone who came. If you couldn't come, don't worry, because you might have noticed that it is probably this week's episode, unless there is some audio catastrophe.
Unless we fall out with the venue, basically.
Basically, we haven't had it sent to, we're recording this on Monday afternoon, Monday lunchtime, and we still haven't had the recording sent to us by the AV people at the venue. Mm-hmm. So if they send it to us in time, it will be this week's episode.
Yeah.
If they don't, it will be next week's episode. And if they didn't record it, which very comfortingly the AV man decided to tell me might be a real possibility that it might not get recorded.
That was so bizarre.
AV people are weird, man. I'm sorry if you're an AV person. Not like for you. I just mean, I'm sorry I'm saying this because it's obviously a huge generalization. But he was just so like, yeah, so I know you paid £500 to get this recorded, but it might just not record. And I was like, why are you saying that to me? Just make sure it fucking records then. That's like me being like, I know you paid $5, $10, $20 for this Patreon subscription, but you might just not get any content this month. I was like, well, maybe we should just try to make that happen.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He was like, well, we recommend that you bring your own person in so you have a backup. And I was like, okay, literally who told us that?
No.
Nobody.
And he was like, we bring somebody in to do it. And I was like, I thought that's what we paid £500 for. But anyway, it is what it is. So if you're listening to it, everything went well. We'll figure it out. We will find out soon. But if you're not, then you're listening to something else that is equally as good. So don't worry about it.
We had fun though. It was
a
good show. Really good fun.
It was a really good show. We always enjoy doing a live show and it was just a lot of fun. And then went out after and I wasn't actually that drunk. I realized the next day I was just like, think I was just had a lot of energy, but I wasn't actually that drunk. Mm. And I actually felt fine. I looked tired the next day.
I don't think you looked that tired.
But I think it was just a lack of sleep. Mm. A lot of lack of sleep because of too much alcohol in my system. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But otherwise, pretty good.
Yeah. And then we went to pub on Saturday. I just got to the point of hungover where I just could not be physically in my flat anymore. Mm-hmm. And Saru was just MIA on WhatsApp for like 4 hours.
I know. I was just like, I don't know. And I was with ACD face and we were like going to go to the pub to meet his friends. And I was like, I'm so hungover. I really don't know if I want your friends to look at me like this. But at the same time, also just like nobody wanted to go to the pub that early. So then I went to a garden center and I was just like, oh my God, I'm so fucking tired. I just want to go back to bed. But we did make it to the pub.
Yeah. So I just started walking from my house to Bethnal Green, which is about hour and a half, 2 hours, because I was just like, I just need to be outside and I'll just figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then I got there and someone we knew was there already, so that was nice. So overall a success. That pub though, fuck me.
Yeah, I've not been to a pub with that level of shoddy service in quite a long time.
And like, it was the Champions League final, right? So like, in the evening, it was ramo-jammoed. Like,
when we were
horrific.
There, it was dead.
Nobody was there.
It was just like one person's birthday party, which we were at. And then like a few other groups of like two or three. And this pub, I can't even explain to you. I went to the bar at one point. I mean, I'll tell you what else happened when I went to the bar, but I went to the bar at one point and I was like trying to place this order. It was for 2 pints of beer, 1 glass of Prosecco and a bowl of chips. That's all I wanted to order. Mm-mm. That's it. And I was just like, can I please have 2 pints of neck oil and also 1 glass of Prosecco? And that guy was just like, yeah. And he just like started very laboriously in glasses pouring neck oil.
He was having a bad day, that guy.
He was having a fucking terrible day, but he was making my day objectively worse having a terrible day. Mm-hmm. And then he was just like, somebody else came to the bar to be like, who's next? Massive queue behind us. And he was like, no, can you just pour this Prosecco? I was like, why are you sharing a tiny order between another person? That is the least efficient way you could be running this bar, but whatever. And then I was like, can I please also get a bowl of chips? And he was like, in a minute. And I was like, I wasn't suggesting that you go and get me a bowl of chips.
Yeah, actually,
now.
If you wouldn't mind going to Iceland.
I was just like, can I please add a bowl of chips to the order? And I really am like trying to stress how empty this bar was.
Yeah.
There was like 3 people waiting behind me to be served and one other person who had been served before me. This guy was just like fucking probably very hungover, but I was like, don't take that out on me. Please,
oh, he definitely was. He was just like, whenever he wasn't serving anyone, which was all the time, he was just downing pints and pints and pints of fat Coke.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you know, I feel your pain of being in your position, but like, come on.
Can we get it together?
And then
please?
The manager lady, oh my God, she was terrifying.
Like, we're talking about the old George on Bethnal Green, just so you all know.
I had ordered some food before Saru got there. Didn't get my food for about 2 hours. I just assumed they'd like forgotten it, and I was like, okay, whatever. And then I moved table, but there was basically no one in the car. It's very obvious, just one
also,
party in the
had
garden.
She taken your order?
Yes.
And you were wearing a bright orange dress and she had seen you and you were sat outside. It's not like you were hiding in an upstairs loft of the
no
pub.
Exactly. And then she came over and brought me my food, which is for a start not what I ordered, and secondly she was like, well, if you're actually going to move tables next time, then like please let us know, because like thank you for the last 5 minutes of my life. And I was like,
no, she said 30 minutes, as if she'd been wandering around for 30 minutes. And look, well, yes, working in hospitality is difficult, but we're talking about a tiny pub garden where Hannah was wearing an orange dress where she had served her. This woman was just being a massive dick.
So, but we had a good time.
Terrible stuff. But apart from the weird man.
Right.
So I was trying to get served before the man was basically like angry at me that I ordered a bowl of chips. By the way, that bowl of chips took about an hour and a half to come to me. And when it did come to me, I'm not even kidding you, it was like a soap dish. Yeah. It had like 5 chips in it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are you actually serious? All I could do was
your
laugh.
Face was so funny.
And the woman who brought them to me looked embarrassed. Because I had to ask her 3 times. And she was like, basically like, I'm so sorry. I was like, this is the worst.
I liked
experience.
Her. She was nice.
She was just, she looked embarrassed to be working
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, I need to leave because I need to actually eat something and I can't order anything else here because I don't have another 3 hours of my life to waste. But I went into the pub with my good friend Dami, and we were sat there waiting. And we were actually so fed up with how long it was taking that we just sat at a table and waited for the queue to go down.
Wow.
Queue of 3 people who were together
right.
to go down.
Yeah.
And when we were sat there, this man suddenly just appears out of nowhere. He's clearly quite drunk.
Mm.
Not like, but I also think just quite strange. And he like turned up just next to us and he's like, are you two together? But like very like borderline
right.
like aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, we're friends and we are sat here together. And then he was like, what are you, are you half Jamaican, half English? And I was like, no, I'm neither of those things actually. And then I was just trying to go back into a conversation with Dami. And then he was like, no, then what is it? What are you? And then he kept pointing at his arm because he was also brown.
Mm.
I think Dami said maybe he was South American. And I think that probably is the best guess we could have made for him. And I was like, and then he kept going like this. And I was like, I don't know. And if you are listening to the audio only version, he just kept putting his hand up to his face, but to indicate my face. And then he was like, so what I be you, what is it? And I was just like, well, my parents are Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, that's the end of that conversation. And he was like, so what, but what are you? I'm like, also
adopted.
Yeah, this Indian couple just adopted this half Jamaican, half English baby, and then she just like can't face up to that. And then and here's this man to reveal it all to me in the pub.
Yeah, cracking the code.
And then he was just like, no, but you are half white, aren't you? And I was like, no. And I don't know why he kept being so aggressive about that fact. Mm. I don't know what he was trying to imply. It was very bizarre, very strange. And I was just like, no, I'm not. I promise you I'm not. And then he was like, right. And then he was just like, well, I just thought. And then he pointed his face again. And then he just walked off. And me and Dami were like, what the fuck just happened?
God.
And then he was stood at the bit of the bar where there's no service. So at the very end of the bar. And I was like, well, we should go up there now because otherwise somebody else is going to get in this queue. So me and Dami stood up. We went and we're trying to get served by this incredibly hungover bartender who hates me. And then this guy who stood there, stood right next to me. He's now not yelling, but quite assertively speaking to the hungover bartender. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and I'm not lying. This is exact. And this conversation was happening when we just got to the bar. So we hadn't been served yet. And I just looked at Dami and I was like, can you hear what he's saying? And he was like dropped his voice to listen. And we're like, oh my God. This guy was basically saying to the bartender, there are too many girls here with their legs out. And he's like, what are you going to do about it? And the barman was like, as much as he was annoying me, he was like, it's up to people how they want to dress. It's not got anything to do with you. But this guy kept going. He was like, no, I don't know why there are people here with such short skirts on. And I was like, thank God I'm wearing a fucking midi dress because this guy's clearly fucking on one. And I don't know if it's because the reason he came over and was being aggressive at first and asking me what I was because my dress was midi, but it had a slit in it. So when I sat down, you could see like my whole, like from my knee down.
How dare you?
I know. How dare I? And maybe he was like, I don't know. Anyway, so this conversation was going on. Mm-hmm. Very bizarre. And then he decided, and then when the barman was distracted by not getting me chips, he just like leant over the bar and picked up the like staff walkie-talkie and then started speaking to it. He definitely didn't fucking work there, except until later when I theorized that maybe he was the chef and that's why we didn't get any food and he was just on his break outside.
Oh.
But he just like picked up the walkie-talkie and started talking into it. And then the barman was like, you can't do that. Give that back to me. Give that back. It was so weird.
Oh my God, that's so bizarre.
And then we thankfully got served and we could leave. And I was like, I'm not going back to the bar.
Mm-mm.
Especially not on my own.
No.
Because that guy is acting all sorts of crazy inside. Very bizarre.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, please don't forget to hop on over to patreon.com/redhanded. We'll put a link down below to make it even easier for you. Please make the most of our huge flash sale on annual memberships. And you can find out more about what we offer on each tier once you get to patreon.com/redhanded. And just in case you weren't listening, patreon.com/redhanded to get 12 whole months of membership for the price of just 10. And just have a look at what we've got to offer. What else are you doing? Your job?